Hi, listener. Just back again to say welcome to the Halloween episode of season 2, episode 1 of No Heathen Land. This is the second part. It was a great place to pick back up because the dictaphone got full and I had to clear it. And the episode is also quite long, so I wanted to split it in two. So, just wanted to introduce this second part and I hope you enjoy. Well, the curse of the podcast is sort of back because the dictaphone was full. But now we've remedied that and actually it stopped in the perfect place, which you'll see from the edit.
That was great. We had a lovely little break.
We did have a lovely little break to delete things off the dictaphone. So now I'm going to go into my second haunting. And this, again, is a place, it's a building, but this is a pub. And it's probably not a pub that you're thinking of because there's quite a famous one in Leeds, but it's not that one. This is in South Yorkshire. So this is in South Yorkshire in a place in Barnsley called Wombwell. And this is actually where I grew up, so I know the area very, very well. It's actually right on the cusp between Wombwell and a place called Darfield. There's like a bridge that goes over and this pub was on there and the pub was called a Low Valley Arms. So I was looking for, when I was thinking about doing this episode, I was looking for haunted places, just, you know, like typed in online, haunted places in Yorkshire, Yorkshire hauntings, haunted objects in Yorkshire, like all that kind of stuff. And this one came up somehow, and I had never heard of it. And this particular haunting was in 2006. So I was like a full adult in 2006, like, my family all lived there. Not that my like family would have been particularly interested, but I think I would have been at university then, so I wasn't actually in. Okay. I was actually in the town or the city. I was elsewhere at that time because I was at university. But I cannot believe that I've never heard of this.
I'm intrigued.
It's not a pub that I ever went to because of its location. It's kind of, I mean, it's a very small place, but everything's in one, like, stripped down the middle on the high street, and this is not there. Mm-hmm. It's like on this bridge that goes over to this place called Darfield. It's just such a specific story. It's quite graphic, and if this did happen, it's really scary.
Oh.
But it is very, like, it's just this one incident, and it's very odd. So, again, this is also in Nick Tyler's wonderful book, and I didn't know, and I opened the book, and here it is.
Gosh.
So again, he does these quite like nice little like nuggets of information. So I'm just gonna read from this so you get the general gist of the story. So on a mild evening in April in 2006, the current landlord and his wife retired to bed, having locked up and secured the building as usual. The landlord was described as being a large, no-nonsense man, the very stereotype of a rural pub landlord and his wife, with a similar build and personality. I'm like, how she feels about that. Does it paint a picture? It does for me.
I'm there, I'm in the moment, carry on.
On this particular evening, the couple were awoken around 1 a.m. by the sound of someone rummaging around the pub and a looming threat of I've skipped a page there, and a rummaging around the pub downstairs. Believing that they were being burgled, the landlord grabbed a bat that he kept positioned next to his bed before running downstairs, shouting loudly and stomping his feet in a bid to frighten away the perpetrators without confrontation. When he arrived downstairs, closely followed by his fearless wife, they noticed that all the televisions were turned on and the room was illuminated also by the light of the jukebox. The couple stated that even though there wasn't any music playing, they were certain they had turned off all the appliances the previous night as they did every evening. At this point, the landlord believed that they'd been burgled and figured items had been switched on as like a practical joke. His wife turned off the televisions and the jukebox, went to search the building, both checked the safe, and it was still loaded with a £50 float for the following day.
Hmm.
So it wasn't that. So, realising that nothing has been taken, the wife called the police to report the incident, and officers were sent to the premises immediately. While they were en route, the landlord continued to check the pub for any signs of damage or clues. After checking the gentleman's toilets, which seemed to be untouched, he went to check the ladies. And this is where it just gets really, really weird. So his wife stated that he watched him walk inside the restroom before running out a few seconds later with a look of sheer panic on his face. He then proceeded to tell her that the gruesome sight he encountered was a naked woman of flesh and bone dripping in blood with half of her jaw missing, slumped in one of the cubicles.
Good lord.
I know. The frightened couple wondered if the woman had been assaulted, and on the request of his wife, the landlord returned to the toilet to offer assistance until the police arrived. Once back inside, there was no sign of a woman or any blood he claimed to have seen previously. Shortly after the police arrived and listened to the tale from a clearly shaken-up publican and his wife, the landlord was telling his version of the events to the officers. The toilets were heard to flush in the ladies' toilets. The officers and the landlord returned to the restroom to investigate and obviously saw that there was no one there. The three cubicles started to flush over and over. There was obviously no one flushing the toilets, and there was no explanation as to where the water was coming from, as the cisterns would have been unable to refill as the toilets flushed violently, continuously for a few minutes. Spooked by the strange goings-on, the officers fled, closely followed by the landlord and his wife, escaping through the bar towards the door. As they all rushed through, the televisions turned on for a second time, right in front of their eyes. That night, the landlord and his wife stayed with friends and never returned to their pub after those strange happenings in 2006. And the pub closed permanently soon after and has now been converted for another use.
Oh my goodness.
How weird is that? And it's so recent and it's so specific, just this one incident. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, and it makes you want to know, you know, why those specific circumstances of that kind of crime scene that he basically discovered.
It's very weird, isn't it? So this is the pub. I'll link a picture. There's not many photos of it, but this is a photo of the pub. Let's see if we can see a bigger picture. So it's just sort of like, I reckon it's probably a 1950s, 60s build.
Okay.
Yeah, there's nothing unusual about it. Like I said, like, this is from my hometown. This says on here that it's Darfield, right on this cusp. And when I looked at it, I was like, oh, that pub, like, I've been past that so many times. Mm. I'm pretty sure I've never been in, but I might have been. And then, yeah, so nothing ever happened afterwards and it shut. I watched, basically I was trying to find a video about it.
Yeah.
So that I could, it's nice to get different mediums of finding stuff. And the only one I found was actually this author of this Haunted Yorkshire, Nick Tyler. He's got a YouTube channel which seems to be defunct. He's not really got much on it. But he has got like a short little extract. Basically, I think it must have been before the book came out and he's telling his story.
Right.
But it's pretty much word for word what's written in here. One person commented under it and said, this is my family and this is not how the story went. Why has no one replied to this?
Tell us how it really went.
And then you're like, is that right? So I just thought that was so bizarre. So I text my sister, who still lives there, and said, like, have you heard about this? And she's like, she said, I've never heard of that. So I'd love to, when I'm next at home, I'll do some digging and see if anyone's heard of it.
Yeah.
But there doesn't seem to be very much about it. There is, so there's a newspaper in Barnsley called the Barnsley Chronicle. Like, everyone's got their own, like, paper, haven't they? And there was I found an article, like a short article online about it, very short. And then there's, like, a couple of websites like this one we're just looking at called Haunted Yorkshire. But it's very, like, it's like lines. It's 8 lines or something about it. And then it's in this book. So, yeah, I'd like to know what
definitely
happened after that. It's so weird, isn't it? And so, like, gruesome.
Exactly. I think it's one of the most kind of potentially disturbing things about that kind of story is we used to the idea of ghost stories being rooted in some kind of past crime or murder or something. But what if the murder was never discovered?
Yeah.
And I think that's quite creepy, isn't it? I mean, for every murder you know about, there's probably one you don't.
Yeah.
And I think that's really quite, disturbing, like you say.
Yeah. I just couldn't believe it was, like, so close to literal home.
What was the pub that you mentioned in Leeds that's really famous for being haunted?
Isn't there one? Is it the something Lion? It's one, I think.
There's the Red Lion.
It's now
in
closed,
Leeds,
doesn't it?
Which has closed. But I don't know the story behind it.
I'm pretty sure that is. And then I think pubs are pretty well known for
being
haunted.
They are,
aren't
they? They're quite historical, they're quite well frequented.
I'm sure it's the Red Lion. But I mean, there's lots of old pubs in these, isn't there?
True,
the oldest is like White Locks.
Yeah.
And
there's probably got to go. City Varieties, I'm sure, has ghost stories. The Palace definitely does.
Yeah. So maybe I'll do a haunted pubs episode at some point. That would be good.
From
wouldn't
the pub.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the episode with Lovely Josh, he mentioned his was like a. wasn't haunted, but it was a, like an execution sort of thing.
Yes.
A, like trial in the pub. In and all those things did go on in like the, you know, like 1800s and that's prior. True. That's yeah. where you would hold a trial.
True.
So lots of potential for spooks in pubs, for definitely. Sure.
And you know what? That brings us brilliantly on to my next haunting.
Which look at that. It's not like we planned it, which we I definitely know, didn't.
Which we completely didn't. And this isn't the story of a haunted pub, but a pub features very prominently in the way the story's told.
Exciting.
And it's actually one of my favourite things about the story.
The cat's back again. Hello, Wallace. Walking over everything.
I love a story that is kind of told as a story. Mm. So this story, which I must admit, I'm going to just read it as it is in the paper.
Yes.
Half of me feels like that's cheating, but half of me says...
I've just read both my stories out fully.
This one comes from the East Riding Telegraph. From 1895. So I love the language. I love the way it's reported. It's clearly, it's not, you know, it's not a news story. It's just something that's been sent in this case, by somebody called Arthur E. Lunn of Driffield.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking, I think, East Yorkshire here, certainly on the way to Bridlington. It's not a place I'm familiar with, although I might have been through it. So basically, I'll give you a little bit of information before I read you the story.
Mm-hmm.
It mentions a place called Elmswell, which I can't find much of a record of these days. It is clearly somewhere that is and certainly used to be next to Driffield, which, as I say, is on the way to Bridlington. There is an Elmswell farm that still exists, and it's a bit of a visitor centre. It's kind of an archaeological site where Bronze Age burials took place. Ooh. And it sounds like a really interesting place, actually. And I like the fact that that's nothing to do with the story that I'm going to read you, but it obviously kind of sets the scene of this interesting historical place. And now, I did mention that it involves a pub, and the pub is in the story. It's also called the Red Lion. It's still there, or at least the building's still there. It closed as a pub in 2017, but apparently, according to my research online, it was recently bought in the summer of this year. So it may reopen as a pub, or it may be redeveloped into something else. You can certainly see pictures of it if you go online looking at the Red Lion pub in Driglington. The story also mentions a tomb, but I couldn't find any references or pictures or any information at all about this tomb. But it does mention that the tomb is in a triangular patch of land. And if you go doing a bit of a Google map search of the area around Driffield and going towards Elmswell, there is quite a prominent triangular patch, so have a little look for that. The last thing I'll say about it is the story, although it's printed in 1895 in late December, the story is set, I think, around the early 1800s. It makes reference to the Iron Horse, which is another way of describing a steam train.
Oh.
So I think we're talking first couple of decades of the 1800s here.
I don't know if I've ever heard that reference.
I had to double check.
It kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of name that gets loaned to, well, used for other things. So sometimes people will call a bike an Iron Horse. But see what you think anyway, because
okay.
I'm going to read it as is.
I'm ready.
So you get that lovely language, you'll get some really odd references. You might interpret the Iron Horse a little bit differently and see what you think. So I'm not even going to tell you the title of this story because it's a bit of a spoiler, but I will tell you it at the end. But it is subtitled A Story of Great and Little Driffield, Founded on Fact. So here we go. The sands of life have run out of the glass, and the last surviving character in the episode I'm about to relate has long since crossed the bar and joined the great majority. Therefore, I run no risk of giving offence to anyone. The period of my story was about the time when the Iron Horse superseded the old mail coach, which every other day plied between the Red Lion at Driffield and Scarborough. The Red Lion in those days was not the commanding structure it is today, but a low, rambling old hostelry, whose sanded, flagged floor and huge fires bespoke the comfort and hospitality that could always be found there. It was kept by old Widow Milson, who had a high reputation for making a flambro, which consisted of hot ale and sugar with a dash of gin in it, a drink very popular in that day. And I love the fact that this story has this cocktail recipe
that
right in the middle of
fabulous.
It.
Fabulous.
So, at this inn, kindred spirits were wont to assemble to take their flambros and talk gossip. Of these, there was one whose hair was matted and dark brown, whilst his beard was thin and wiry and white as driven snow. His professions were multifarious. He was a bill poster, town crier, rag and bone merchant, hawker of oranges and the local newspaper. And he was known throughout the countryside as Tallow Tommy, a sobriquet acquired by having, for half a gallon of beer, eaten a whole pound of tallow candles, wicks and all, complete, drinking the beer in the meantime. I mean,
yep,
what a great name, and what a great thing to be named after.
Wow.
So that's Tallow Tommy, the hero of this story. Anyway, midway between Little Driffield and Elmswell is a triangular space surrounded by dark, tall firs. And within this space is a tomb, the flagstone on the top of which says, "Here lies the body of Thomas Best, Esquire, Lord of the Manor of Little Driffield." Why he's buried here, tradition does not say, and few are aware of the existence of the tomb. And yeah, I can't find any reference to this. But that little triangular plot of land perhaps does check out.
Yeah.
Now we get into the story proper. One cold winter's night, when the snow lay about 3 inches deep on the ground, and the sky was overcast by heavy clouds, 7 convivial spirits met at the old Red Lion hostelry, and were spending the night in telling ghost stories and quaffing flambros, Tallow Tommy being one of the company. Tallow pooh-poohed the idea most strenuously as to the appearance of anything supernatural. He dared go into any churchyard at any hour of the night. One of his companions thereupon offered to wager a gallon of beer that he dare not go and hammer a nail into Squire Best's tomb. Tallow, who was always ready to do anything, took the wager and at once rose to go and prove his bravery. It was still dark as Erebus, and but for the snow it would have been difficult for him to find his way to the tomb. It was bitterly cold, and the effects of the flambros he'd imbibed had worn off before he reached Little Driffield, and the nearer he approached the tomb, the less became his courage. At length he reached the field. 'Twas midnight, and not a sound approached nigh. With hammer and nails in his hands, he approached the tomb. Descending the 2 steps leading into the enclosure, each nerve strung up to the highest tension, and the perspiration stood on his forehead, whilst a stream of cold water seemed to be passing down his spiral column. It was the work of but a moment to drive in the nail, but when turning to fly, he found he could not, being held there as if in a vice. He tugged and tugged at his coat, but all to no purpose, until, summoning all the strength he possessed, off flew the big bone button from his coat collar, and the coat slid off his shoulders. Finding himself free, he dashed from the spot with all his might and main, feeling assured that either the squire or someone worse had hold of him, and nor did he stop till he reached the kitchen of the hostelry, where his companions were awaiting his return. Gasping for breath, he threw himself on the long settle, his hair erect, his eyeballs glaring, and ever and anon casting uneasy glances at the door, so he thought he was being followed. When he became somewhat composed, he detailed his visit to the tomb, and wound up by assuring his comrades that he would never more dispute that spirits walked the night. On the following morning, a visit was paid to the tomb, and there, sure enough, were Tallow's coat and cap, with every evidence of a struggle. The whole thing was immediately accounted for by the discovery that in his fright he had driven the nail through his coat tail and thus fastened himself to the brickwork. After a hearty laugh, in which Tallow did not take part, they adjourned to the village inn at Little Driffield and drank the gallon of beer.
I love that.
I know, it's such a good little story, such a find from 1895.
Yeah, and I love their language is so nice.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
I love how over the top the Victorians are, like, every little detail is like, yes. He threw himself and his hair was all in end, yeah. His eyes were big. I love
that little description, actually, the cold water being poured down his spine. Yeah. That's so vivid. I really like that.
That's a fabulous story.
I just felt I had to read it because one of my favourite episodes of this podcast is the one where you do, is it The Witchy Wonderings?
Oh,
and you read that brilliant story with the person on the bike who gets lost on the
way
home.
I love that. It's so sweet,
it's
isn't
so
it?
It's so good. And
yeah.
I love an old story from the newspaper like this one.
Yeah. Was that The Witchy Wonderings or was that the one with me and you? The last Halloween one? Anyway,
no, I think
it's
all witches.
It
that
took
one.
Me about 7 takes to read those. I mean, I'm sure anyone that's listening knows I talk really fast. I've got like a bit of a speech impediment. I stumble over my words. Why I'm doing a podcast, I have no idea. But yeah, you read that really nicely, and I loved that. That was so good.
Oh, do you want to know the title that ruins
it? Yes.
Yeah, the title of the story is called "Nailed to a Tomb."
Oh.
I feel like, I mean, it's a bit of a guessable twist,
Nailed
but I
to
feel
tomb.
Like that does kind of spoil
That's
things.
Like some kind of like 1950s, like,
oh god, it
like
is
rubbish but good. Like a horror flick or a book or something, or a comic.
It's a great title, isn't it? Yeah. But yeah, not for this. It certainly caught my attention when I was looking through the old newspapers.
Mm-hmm. How did you find it? What were you looking for?
I got myself an Ancestry and did a little search on certain keywords, you know, like ghost. Mm-hmm. And actually, I read through quite a lot before I came across this one, and then I just knew it was the one. As I said, I love when a story is a tale within a tale, and I think that's a lovely, cosy example.
Can we talk about this candle eating business?
What is with that? I mean, yeah, Tallow Tommy, yeah. Oh, do you know what, as well? I actually skipped another part of the story because it tells you what happened to Tallow Tommy. And they just throw it lightly in right in the middle of the story, but it's quite sad. So this is the full unedited version. I'll give you the paragraph that I cut. So we're talking about Tallow Tommy, and it says, and it's talking about his jobs that he's done. And it says, with all these jobs, however, he was unable to make both ends meet, so he migrated to Hull, where he became a docker. And whilst engaged delivering a cargo of wheat, he fell from the deck into the hold and broke his neck. What a sad end for Tallow Tommy.
Right in the middle of the article?
Yeah,
as well?
Before he even goes on his adventure. So I had to take that out because I was like, well,
you
that's...
You think you'd put that at the end?
Exactly.
Oh, dear.
What a downer.
Let's put it down on the story.
Oh dear, maybe I should have... Yeah.
No, I'm joking.
Sorry.
I mean, fabulous.
If we're cursed by anybody, it's probably by Tallow Tommy.
Well, wait till you hear my next one.
Oh, God.
That's the most cursed.
I can't wait.
So here we go. For my final haunting today. My final haunting today is a chair. Do you know this chair?
No, but I'm sitting on a chair and I'm now sufficiently terrified.
You sat on quite a big sofa.
Okay.
I can assure you it's from IKEA, which I don't think is haunted.
Right, let's go with that.
Let's hope not. So, this chair is called Busby's chair. And I had actually heard of this, but it's one of those things that just flopped out of my mind at some point. It's a very weird story, but weirder still, like, the way that it's been, like, retold. Specifically on YouTube, which we will get to.
Okay.
So again, I'm reading from fabulous Haunted Yorkshire. I'll give you a little bit of background about this chair. So this chair is in Thirsk. The chair is still there. You can go and see the chair.
Where? In a window? In a chair shop?
It's in a little museum in Thirsk.
Okay. Wow.
I'll come on to where it is in a museum.
Okay, brilliant.
So Nick Tyler calls this an enchanting story of that marks the end of a journey through North Yorkshire. It begins in the early 18th century when a drunken failure of a man named Thomas Busby got into an argument with his father-in-law, Daniel Oughty. So Busby was the most unsavoury of characters. A violent temper, a short fuse, made him a man few would want to upset. There's much speculation as to why the pair quarrelled, but the general consensus is that it would have been over a monetary disagreement. As the pair were both involved in illegal coining trade, so that sounds pretty dodgy, doesn't it?
Yep.
The process of counterfeiting coins that was punishable by death. This just sounds like a wrong one. The ruckus quickly escalated and ended with Otis' lifeless corpse being dumped in the constable's stables. After the man was reported missing, a party was dispatched and they quickly found the crudely dumped body as suspicion quickly fell upon Thomas Busby. When the police went to arrest the man, he was found slumped in his favourite chair, a position in which he spent the majority of his adult life whilst working in his illegal trade. This was in the public house. After being convicted of the crime, Busby was sentenced to death by hanging. His dying wish was to have his one last drink in his favourite chair. The chair was brought from his home to the gallows. Oh, sorry, the chair was in his house. It was later in a pub.
Mm-hmm.
The chair was brought from his home to the gallows, and after sitting and enjoying his final drink, he cursed the chair, stating that death would befall anyone stupid enough to place their derriere upon it.
Oh, my gosh.
With his last words being spoken, he was hanged on sight before his soulless corpse was hung on a post or stoop, as it was commonly known, as a reminder for vagabonds to remain within the law. So following the execution, the local tavern, there we go, which was called Busby Stoop, I was so excited to see the pub and I was ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read the story, I was like, shoes on, we're going. It's not there anymore.
Oh.
It got changed into an Indian restaurant in 2013 called Jaipur Spice.
I mean, I'd still go.
But I don't know if that survived the pandemic. But I love that it was called Busby Stoop, so During its years as a public house, the chair was acquired as a novelty item for guests to visit and sit upon, and people would come from far and wide to view the uncharacterably macabre artefact.
Wow.
The chair quickly grew a reputation of the witchcraft variety, as numerous people that came to sit upon the chair became victims of tragic accidents shortly after, all of which were attributed to Busby's final curse. The most notable of these occurred when two Royal Air Force pilots sat in a chair in 1967, only to die on their way home from the pub as their car collided with a tree.
Oh.
In 1971, a builder sat on the hexed seat before plummeting to his death from a roof of a nearby conversion he was working on just an hour later.
Oh, God.
In 1978, the chair was donated to the Thirsk Museum, where it remains to this day. So what me and Ross are going to do now is just have a little break, and we're going to watch a video about Busby's chair. But the video is very special because it's an American video and it is wacky.
I can't wait.
It's like, it's done by a bot, I think, but it's so funny, the story. And they sort of interject all these stock footage images of people that have got nothing to do with the story. But the best bit about it are the comments. So we're going to go away and watch this video, and then we're going to have a look through some of the comments, and we can decide how we feel about Busby's chair from these comments, and I can't wait to share them with you. So we shall be back. So we just watched a video from a YouTube channel called Facts Verse, which is an American channel. It's kind of one of those, I can't describe it. It's like a robot reading it that's like facts. And the story's fairly interesting. Like, they go quite in depth with some things that weren't in my book. I don't know where they got that information from, but the best thing about it is it's like totally illustrated with stock footage, modern stock images of just, like, they say he was very sad, and then there's a stock footage of like a woman looking sad. It's very weird, isn't it?
I do not know what I've just watched. I've not seen anything like that before. I've never seen so many people looking thoughtful.
Yeah.
I think whenever anybody says the word think, it cuts to a person looking thoughtful.
Yeah. That's very interesting. And like, if they mention, well, whatever they mention, there is a stock image for it. Drink, and there's a picture of like a man walking across a room with cocktails on a, on a tray. Anyway, the reason why I wanted to watch that was because of the comments. So there's quite a few sort of like people, like comedians. One that I can think of mostly is Adam Buxton, that does this, like he will read out comments from YouTube videos because they're always absolute gold. And these made me laugh so much. So I'm just going to read you a selection of them. So these are comments on a video about a cursed chair, right? Now that's what I call a high chair. RIP those poor victims.
Oh.
No way I will ever sit in that chair. Instead of death sentences, just make death row inmates sit in this chair and see what happens.
Oh my, that's a great idea.
I mean, we don't even have the death penalty in this country.
Argue.
I would sit in it on my own if I was in perfect health, and I'd sit in it all day and see what happens.
I mean, that is raising a fair point. How long do you have to sit in it?
Nobody sat in it because they won't let you. Anyone, because it is cursed. I would certainly sit in it if they let it down. Wonder what happened if one places a doll in that chair. Would it come to life and hack people up like Chucky did in that movie, Child's Play? I often do wonder. Plot twist, that's an execution chair. Okay. There's a couple of other good ones that I'm looking for. That chair barely looks 100 years old, let alone 300. I'll put a link to this video in, and I'll put a link to the picture of the chair as well.
The chair looks great.
The chair, yeah, it looks like, it looks quite comfortable, doesn't it?
It looks, sturdy. Yeah,
it's like low, but really high backed.
Mm-hmm.
There's one, oh, I would sit in the chair for $1 billion sign, dollars. I wouldn't sit in the chair. There's a lot of other places to sit. This was my favourite. I'm a scientist. I was trained not to believe in such things, but I also recognise a pattern when I see one. Too many young, healthy people died right after sitting in this chair. No, I would not sit in the chair. If I was dared to sit in that chair by my friends, I would say, hell nah to the nah, nah, nah. And that is where I'm going to end that story. The one thing that I'm going to say at the end was just, so in this Haunted Yorkshire book, he does sort of say at the end that there's been obviously a lot of people saying this is coincidence, this is like a hoax. Mm-hmm. And apparently the death record, execution record, is in the assizes for a lot earlier than what was claimed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they think it's fabricated, basically. So Nick Tyler says, after considering all the evidence, I believe that the story was fabricated in a bid to bring customers to the pub in times gone by.
That's worse than the ending of Tallow Tommy.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of haunted, well, cursed chair.
Cursed chair.
With the power to kill. I mean...
With the power to kill. So what I don't think I said in this, I think it was when this was stopped, it's hung on the wall in the Thirsk Museum. So it's still there, you can go and see it. I had a look. Thirsk Museum looks like, it's very small, it's like one, I think it's like one room.
Okay. Oh,
it's
like, that makes sense.
I guess it's like a folk museum, mm-hmm. but it's just a very small little thing with nice little trinkets and things. But the chair is hung on the wall, you can go and see it. And apparently, they've never let it down since it's gone up. They don't let people sit in it, and apparently the staff won't touch it either.
Wow.
Would
you sit in it? Would you sit in the chair?
Nah, Helton, nah. No, I would not, because that creeped me out. Would you sit there?
Oh, of course I would sit in the chair.
Would you?
Yeah.
Would you, for $1 billion, dollar sign?
Dollar sign. Yes.
But didn't
you
listen to that scientist?
This is true. I mean, I generally
YouTube
do.
YouTube scientist.
Sort of... It's a comfy looking chair. I'd give it the benefit of the doubt.
Mm, yeah.
It's not very well displayed, but if it's a one room museum, that makes sense why it's kind of squished into a corner.
Yeah. So yeah, it's in a corner. It's hung upon the wall with like a big like.
What a great story, though. Even if it's fabricated, it's a great story.
Yeah. It seems like there's a bit more to the story than what I said, but this podcast is going to be so long, I didn't want to go into it. Basically, bad guy killed someone over money or a woman, possibly this guy's daughter, and cursed the chair. His favourite chair that he had that then got taken to the pub. And the pub was real. It did exist until 2013. So, yeah. So, what's your final...
Well, my final spook, and actually the title of the story is Secondhand Spook, so very perceptive of you there. Yes. And it is also a haunted object story, which is great. Mm. And it's not a chair, but it is a piece of furniture. In fact, it's a cupboard. It's a haunted cupboard.
I did mention
at Temple Newsome they have what might be a haunted cupboard. No little boy comes out of this cupboard. But it may be a story that only exists in this one particular book. It's a bit of a book like your book. So it is called Yorkshire Stories of the Supernatural.
Mm.
And it's written and edited by Andy Owens. And I think he's written a few of these sorts of books, like Haunted Bradford and stuff like that. But I don't know how well known this story is. I don't think it's quite as exciting as your chair story, but I'll give you the details and you can tell me, would you sit in this cupboard?
I don't know. Would I fit in the cupboard?
It's a big cupboard, actually. Okay. The cupboard itself is 6 feet tall by 3 feet wide. I mean, this is wardrobe size.
Is it a haunted wardrobe?
Maybe it's a haunted wardrobe. Maybe they didn't want to say that. It was a little bit too Narnia or something. I don't know. See what you think. So they may have changed the names for this story. It's about a couple who are named as June and Peter Henderson. And they're actually from Lancashire, but they end up in... I know, horrifying. You gasped when I said that. That's not the end of the story, though. It gets worse.
That is the worst bit.
That's a story. So they've lived... The nice thing about this story is they've lived in their house happily for about 10 years. There's been no spooky occurrences whatsoever. Until they go to an auction, they see this beautiful and rather large cupboard... And they bid on it. We're talking 1995 here, not the price. This is the year that they go to this auction. I should clarify, this is in Doncaster.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they go there in 1995. They see this bargain of a cupboard. They get it for a great price. And basically they've got a spare room, which they've chucked all their stuff in, clothes, shoes, etc. And June particularly, her thinking is, buy this cupboard, stick everything in there, and we'll actually be able to like use the room again. So they buy it, and they get it delivered free. I mean, all signs are good. This is delivered free to their house by the estate agents that have put on this kind of, this auction. But immediately after they set up the cupboard, Peter finds that the house's temperature has dropped. So he suddenly finds himself feeling quite cold in the house, which is not something he's ever experienced before, and particularly in the spare room around the new cupboard. They've just put the cupboard in, and June says, oh, I'm going to go and get a dress from my wardrobe that I never wear, but I want to keep safe. It'll make up a lot of room in my wardrobe if I stick this in here. So she disappears off to the other room, and Peter's left alone with the cupboard in the spare room. And can you imagine what horrifying thing happens next?
Oh, no.
He hears the toilet flushing.
Another toilet flush.
I know. What is it with ghosts and toilets?
The water flow?
Maybe. So, I mean, this wouldn't be particularly scary were it not for the fact that he definitely hasn't seen his wife come out of the bedroom and go into the bathroom. And in fact, she then does come out of the bedroom and he says, was that you in the bathroom flushing the toilet? And she says, no. So they rush into the bathroom, sure enough, the pipes are all still going. So that's spooky occurrence number one. Spooky occurrence number two happens when they're sitting watching TV that night. They hear a loud bang upstairs. They rush upstairs and they find that a stool from the spare room has somehow found its way into their main bedroom. It's lying on its side. No sort of explanation of how it got there. So this kind of carries on for about a week. Not the stool moving, just the kind of cold kind of air around the spare room. And it kind of culminates about a week later when, I think it's June this time, she walks into the spare room and literally everything from the cupboard has been chucked onto the bed. So the clothes, the shoes, the boxes, everything is just basically chucked out the cupboard. So they've had enough. So, I mean, what do you do in 1995 when you are being stalked by a haunted cupboard?
Call Ghostbusters?
Pretty much. They get out the yellow pages and they contact somebody from a spiritualist church. Oh. So they basically get a medium in. The medium is called Linda Russell. And she goes there and they're about to sort of say to her, right, you come with us up to the spare room. But she's like, no, don't tell me anything. She marches straight up the stairs and she says, is it in the spare room? And they're like, yes.
Yeah, I said that.
So she goes into the spare room and she kind of, I don't know, she kind of assesses it in her spooky way and gets all the vibes. And sure enough, she explains to them who or what is haunting this bargain cupboard. So apparently the ghost is actually an old lady, and she was really upset by the speed at which, after her death, the house was emptied of all its furniture. So instead of haunting the house, she became kind of upset and kind of attached to her belongings, and I presume kind of just jumped into the cupboard and got transferred to their house on the other side of town. How do you get rid of a ghost in a cupboard?
I don't know.
Well, apparently, you have to be medium, perhaps. You say a few prayers. So while she's saying the prayers, the temperature plummets to, like, the lowest they've ever experienced in the house. And they feel a gust of wind go past them. Or is it a gust of wind? And then the temperature starts to come back to normal. And the medium sort of says, yeah, she's now passed on. She's now gone into the light or whatever.
Right.
So, of course, June wants to know, can they keep the cupboard? You know, it's pretty good. Fitted all everything in it. But Peter is less keen, and he donates it to the local church auction. And that is the end of The Haunted Cupboard.
Oh, that's quite a sweet little story, though.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I identify with that. I'm always in the charity shops buying stuff.
Buying haunted things.
Surprised, unless you know that tankard, which did come from Oxford.
Yes, well, it's still in the cupboard.
Oh, God.
Right. We've never drank anything out of it.
I wouldn't recommend it. No. It doesn't look the most...
Oh, we did clean it off.
Oh, did you?
Obviously, yeah, I think obviously it was
manky.
A bit grimy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, oh, that was a very sweet little story. I liked it.
Yeah, Doncaster, so...
Yeah. So, was that, when you found that in your book, did it say where it came from?
The story itself?
Yeah.
I think, basically, when the guy, the author, was putting together this book, he did little call-outs on, you know, local radio, local press, for people to send in their stories. So that's why I wonder if perhaps this story has only made it into this book. But I had a little read through it. Funnily enough,
I got it.
It's a good story, isn't it? I do like a haunted object story.
Yeah, I was hoping, when I was looking for haunted objects, I specifically was looking for haunted objects, I was hoping for, isn't there like a cursed doll somewhere?
Yes, Leeds City Museums.
I was hoping for something like that, but I mean, I probably didn't look long enough, but I was pretty happy with the chair.
Yeah, and the chair's great.
I think it's quite a famous one, so yeah, I think we did. Congrats on both of our hauntings today. Maybe the only people that will be congratulating each other on those. Yeah. I hope everyone's enjoyed listening to them, as much as I've enjoyed anyway, kind of choosing them.
Oh, I really enjoyed kind of, particularly I love looking, if you're ever bored, just look through the newspaper archives online, yes. Putting a few keywords like ghost or whatever, it's fascinating. Yeah,
so fun. It's like if you put in any of the like crime stuff is always really good on. I don't think people realise that stuff's there mm-hmm. on places like Ancestry, and I assume on like Find My Past as well.
Yeah, plenty of it's free. Stuff. Yeah, there's all for every kind of archive you have to pay for, like yeah. something big like the Yorkshire Evening Post, there's always a free one.
Yeah.
So it's brilliant.
Yeah. So we'll end our hauntings there, I think. Now the podcast is ending, as usual, I'm going to carry on doing my regular what have you been enjoying at the moment?
Ooh.
Anything in particular?
Yes, so this October, this spooky season, I've been working my way through the Amityville movies.
Yes.
And actually, when I went back to the first one, which has never been a particular favourite of mine, this time I really enjoyed it.
What year was that made?
1979. And I think what I liked about it this time is I never really thought about before what a nice autumn movie it is.
Mm.
It's like really specifically set between October and November. Yeah. It's got all the rustling leaves and the storms and the cosy, like autumnal vibes. It played really well, so I actually really enjoyed it. And the sequels are very up and down, mm-hmm. but they gradually become haunted object stories. So there's the kind of the Amityville lamp, the Amityville mirror, the Amityville dollhouse. I think there's a clock. It's great. Anything that once was in the house.
Where are you up to now then? How many have you got to go?
I think I've still got 4 to go, but that includes the remake
yeah.
with Ryan Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's also a couple of fairly recent ones, but one of the recent ones is basically the story of the original murders that are yes. very real and took place.
I do know that story. To be honest, I don't know. I've definitely seen at least one of them. Of not the, you know, like clocks and curtains and rugs or whatever there, whatever's haunted in the house. But what one I'd say, maybe it's the original one that I've seen. I have to go back and watch.
It's kind of fun. I mean, you cannot copyright the name Amityville because it's just a place in New York State. So there was about 100 films out there that claim to be Amityville something. But there is a kind of official line, and they're the ones that are tied into the original book and its sequels.
Yeah.
And to be honest, they're kind of a fun watch, especially this time of year.
Mm. We've both recently watched, which is not Halloween themed. Sorry, my cat is digging his claws into my knee when we're speaking now. That's a fuss, I think. There you go. Take your claw out of my knee, please. We've both recently watched White Lotus, haven't we?
Yeah, oh my goodness.
It was so good. So,
what a show.
I know it's been quite critically acclaimed now, hasn't it? And
yes.
I think it's won some awards, or at least been nominated for a lot of them. And you were the one that recommended that I watch it a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always so late to everything. But I did watch it recently, and it was so good.
It's almost like unbearably cringeworthy at times, yeah, isn't it? And I'm not always a fan of that, but it does it so
very
well.
Dark.
Yes.
And kind of funny, but yes. also the things in it aren't, the things that are happening aren't funny, but they somehow make it like really darkly funny.
Yeah.
I would definitely recommend. The cat is jumping and
also, while we're still on the subject of the White Lotus, I have to put in such a good word for Jennifer Coolidge, who I like anyway, but oh my god,
yeah.
how good is she in the White Lotus?
She's just that, she could be that person.
Oh, she's brilliant,
isn't
it?
Just embodies the character amazingly well.
So good, such a good.
And the ending, like, I'm not going to say what happens in case anyone's not watching it and they're going to watch it, but the ending was so, like, it ended how it would end in real life. It was quite unsatisfying. It ended, but it was quite an unsatisfying ending. I felt left it feeling like, oh god, that was realistic and a bit.
That's kind of very fitting for it though, isn't it? Because it's not easy laughs. It's not. It's meant to make you a bit uncomfortable, and life is like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great. So my intention, now the cat's jumping is. His own shadow, oh my goodness.
I think he saw his own shadow.
He does like his own shadow. So my intention for October was to try and watch a horror film every day. And what date are we on? 20th?
Oh, gosh.
I think I've watched 4 or 3.
Oh, well done. You know, that's probably better than I would have managed. Yeah. I've also tried that one year. And I think by the end of the month, I got 20 from 31
so
days.
Good.
Which impressed me. But some of them I deliberately picked because they were like an hour and a quarter. I was like,
yeah.
I can probably
I found myself really overwhelmed. I know, like, Halloween and Halloween films and like the traditions around Halloween have only in, I'd say, like the past less than 10 years mm-hmm. become a lot more popular mm-hmm. in the UK. So you get like a lot more stuff coming out. And on Netflix, they've got like a Halloween collection.
Yep.
I think on Amazon Prime, they've got a Halloween collection. Possibly on Disney, they've got a Halloween collection. But I've just found myself going and thinking, right, I'm going to watch a film. And then scrolling through them, I'm like, I either don't want to watch any of them, or I'm like, oh, I'm really not up for like that theme. Or yeah. But there's like 100 there. And I'm just scrolling through and thinking, no.
It's so hard, isn't it, when you're just so overfaced.
I rewatched The Craft, which as a teenager, me and my best friend absolutely loved it. And going back to it, I don't think I've watched it for about 10 years, mm-hmm. I think. I still really enjoyed it.
Good.
I think it's like it's definitely a nostalgia thing for me. Like, I don't know if I watched it now that I'd feel the same mm-hmm. as like for the mm-hmm. first time. But yeah, like those feelings of like nostalgia came back and like thinking that they just looked so cool.
Yeah.
And like I'm like a grown up person now and I still want to look cool like they do in The Craft. It's quite a fun story. It's like quite a, obviously like a very female centric story with lots of like feminist themes in there, which is good. I like, it's a good film, I
it's
think.
A good 90s movie as well.
It's such a good 90s movie. I think it's late 90s, isn't it? About 97?
So. Yeah, sounds about right.
And then I watched, the other day, I watched the new, I'm doing new in inverted commas, Candyman, because I missed it when it came out last year. And I liked it.
I liked
it's
it
good,
too.
It's good, isn't it?
It's really
quite, got the themes are very, I think, quite well done. Mm-hmm. And I love the main guy in it.
He's yeah, he's great.
Such a good, such a good actor. It's quite a fun movie and
yeah,
a little bit serious but a little bit fun.
Yeah, it's just a good story. I think it's well written.
Yeah, so I mean, I've still got like a week and a bit. Maybe I can fit some more in. Mm. And I sent it to you the other day. I'm quite excited about the Del Toro little mini series that's coming out.
Yes, that must be on soon on Netflix.
Yes, I think it starts on the 25th.
Excellent.
So I think it's 8 episodes over 4 nights that have been released. So hopefully in the next episode I'll be able to say that I've watched them.
Ooh.
It looks very, very fun.
He's a name you can trust, I usually think.
That's what I said as well. I was like, you know it's going to be
yeah.
fun, at least,
yeah.
if not quite scary. It looks like all the stories are like different. I don't think they link together. Or maybe they do link together.
Oh, that would be interesting. I had a quick look and it looks like they're drawn from quite a range of different sources, from, you know, H.P.
Yeah.
Lovecraft to kind of horror comics of the 50s and stuff. So,
yeah
it could be quite mm-hmm. potentially interesting.
So, yeah, that's kind of it for films. And then on TV, also watched a new series which kind of goes along with the theme of the podcast. Like, I'm not trying to sway too far away from the darkish side. And it's like a puppeteered series called Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared on Channel 4. It is so weird and so good. I would recommend anyone to watch it that's got a bit of a, like an odd, dark sense of humour. It's very weird. It's three friends that are all these like puppets, but it's definitely for adults. It's not for children. And they're all on like, so they all live in this house together. But it just gets weirder and weirder as the series goes on. Like, they don't link together, but each episode is a different theme. So it'll sort of be like Friends. But then it just descends into, like, madness by the end of every episode. Something really horrible happens, and it's very, very strange, and I absolutely loved it.
Have you watched all of them?
I've watched all of them.
I've watched the first two.
Did you?
Yeah,
oh, yes.
I agree with you. It's one of the weirdest things I've seen. It's oddly compelling. Like, I watched the first
Isn't
one,
it?
And I'm like, what is this? And then I was like, am I going to watch the second one? I was like, of course I'm going to watch the second one. So I watched the second one. I was like, oh, actually, I think I like that better than the first one.
I think it gets weirder and better. And there's like a lot of mixed medium in it, like some animation, there's some claymation, there's some humans in it.
Mm.
But it's mostly these like three puppets.
Like Sesame Street puppets, I guess.
Yeah.
Except one of them is a human in a costume, more
yes.
like a kind of a
yeah.
Sesame. Oh, yeah, they are.
And then the theme tune got stuck in my head for a couple of days.
Oh, my gosh.
Which I won't sing now, but yeah, if you haven't watched it and you like that kind of thing, I can't even compare it to anything. It's
no,
so odd.
I can't.
Yeah. I guess maybe something like if you've ever watched any of the like Adult Swim
mm-hmm.
shorts, it aligns with some of those kinds of like just weird.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's really surreal and yet really prosaic, because it's just set in this really bland, normal house. But as you say, it things usually just ends something horrendously horrible kind of happens.
Yeah. So that's the end of my recommendations. Do you have anything else?
Recommendation. Do you know what I would stick up for? It's not exactly TV, but have you watched it yet? The film Blonde.
I haven't, but I've only heard bad things.
I have only heard bad things about it, and most of them centre around the idea that it's really disrespectful to her. But I must admit, I didn't really get that.
Okay.
I feel she is portrayed as a victim quite strongly in it, but that is what the film is about.
Mm.
I found it pretty compelling. It's really David Lynch.
Is it?
It's long, but it really held my attention.
Oh.
I thought it was pretty good.
Okay. I do like to make my own opinion about these things. But I have only seen quite...
Same.
Negative things about it.
Well, it's really well made. It's basically about abuse. And I mean, obviously it shows a lot of abuse, but it's not just doing it lightly. It has a point of view. Mm. And I think, you know, if you're trying to say something, okay, go for it.
Okay. I like your point. Maybe don't put it on social media because people will come for you.
Oh God, maybe they're going to come for this podcast.
No. Maybe they are. It's already cursed. It's fine. Come in, join the curse. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so much for being my guest for a third time.
It's a pleasure, as always.
Yeah, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Bye. If you made it to the end of part one and two, well done. Thank you so much for listening to the first episode back. I haven't recorded anything for about 3 months, and while it was a much needed break in general, I'm actually really happy to be back, and Ross was the perfect first guest again. I hope you agree. To be honest, I could have him on every episode and it'd be perfect. I do have some really exciting guests lined up over the next few months, and I'm really excited to get researching and recording again. As before, in season one, the same, all links to research and sources can be found in the episode description in whichever app you are listening to this episode on. You can find more info about the podcast on the No Heathen Land Acast page, or on Twitter. You can see photos and little snippets of fun. The handle is at No Heathen Land. Send me a tweet, follow me, come say hi. I'd love to chat. I do hope you'll join me again in a few weeks for the next episode. Take care, and have a very happy Halloween and Samhain if you celebrate. Goodbye.